Hello, everybody. Welcome to the new bonus episodes, or the bonus series, for the second season. I attended the Costa Rican Big Data School, and, you know, I thought that maybe some of you can take some value out of this. You know, many aspiring computer scientists and software engineers would really benefit from the things that they talk about in this event. This was a five-day event from Monday through Friday, from 8 to 4, so it was pretty extensive, and they talked about a lot of different subjects and, you know, very important things that you got to know in this day and age with big data and data science and data analysis. So I thought, you know what? I'll put this up. Maybe some of my listeners can take advantage of this and can benefit from listening to really, really high-end professors from the Texas Advanced Computing Center. So our instructors will be Wei-Ya Xu. He's a PhD and the group lead for Data Mining and Statistics Group. Prior to joining TAC, he obtained a master's degree in biological sciences and a doctoral degree in computer science from the University of Texas at Austin. Then there's also Charlie Day. Charlie Day is the Director of Training and Professional Development with the User Services Group at TAC, with a background in web development and scientific computing. Charlie's responsibilities at TAC include organizing, developing content, and building curriculums for TAC's academic course selection taught in conjunction with several departments at the University of Texas at Austin, as well as for TAC's professional development and educational team. Oh, well. Oh, and just a quick thanks to Danny Xie, who was the one who recorded these segments. Without him, we wouldn't have this awesome bonus round. So thank you very much, and enjoy.
But we still have work to do. We still want to have some things we want to cover. There's still some subject matters in up-and-coming advanced computing that would be interesting. Plus, so far what we've done is we've built this data model, right? We've built this person object. We've built this this simulation that models what it looks like if you have a population and you have a disease that goes through it, right? And then we've been building these. You can tell by the numbers, that's going to be this little bell curve showing you how long people have been sick, how many people have been sick. But one of the purposes of this exercise is to show you that your data really is only as important as somebody who can interpret your data, right? So to interpret your data, we actually need to plot your data. We need to look at what the numbers are actually telling us and if it's saying something that's reasonable or not. And usually the people, once you get to that stage where you can actually show somebody how valuable your data is, that is when they're willing to pay you for it. Okay, so there is a really cool library in Python called Matplotlib. I'm sure some of you played with, but I just want to introduce it to you and then show you what kind of cool things you can do with it besides just the basics. So we'll go through the basics. We'll show you how you can connect that with DataFrame. And then I'll show you guys how you can do some really simple 3D contour plots with it, all right? So, what is it? It's a graphing library for Python. And like it's just a neat collection of tools that you can do to do some really simple graphs to get some numbers or some pictures to go with your numbers, all right? And it's used heavily in the scientific Python community for the database. So, first thing to do to get started is we need the library matplotlib.pyplot. That's actually the simple plot part of it, and we need NumPy. There's also a command we sometimes use, especially for Jupyter notebooks. It's called matplotlib, and we ask it to do all of our graphs in line, meaning we're not going to be interactive at this moment, all right? Just to tell you, there is a really cool interactive library out there called MPLV3. I'll actually put the note on here. That actually works with Jupyter notebooks extremely well. All right. So, I think we're going to try and leave a little bit early. We'll probably cut out at 4 o'clock again, like we did yesterday, because it's Friday. Everybody kind of wants to go home. I understand that. So the first thing we're going to go is fire up a Jupyter Notebook. So the resource should now be available again. So a little bit of background knowledge on what happened is every time we fire up a notebook and every time there's a little bit of a pause, so your notebook's not coming up as soon as it can, Jupyter automatically creates a backup notebook, all right? So after a while, those backup notebooks accumulate and they accumulate too much. So then it brings down the hub that's actually hosting everything. So we have to go through to the hub and kill all the duplicate notebooks, and that usually is enough to bring it back up. So cross our fingers that's gonna come up. Also, we had a secondary problem is one of our computing nodes. Remember how Wasia said that we have login nodes and compute nodes? So all of our stuff that we're doing on these Jupyter notebooks are hosted on a compute node. One of those compute nodes also went down as well, so we had to bring that back up. So a bunch of little issues that came up today. All right, so I'm gonna go to Stampede2, my Jupyter notebook, and I'm gonna go ahead and create a new Python 3 notebook. And I'm gonna go ahead and call this matplotlib. All right, and like I said, the first thing we need to do is we wanna do all of our plots in line. So matplotlib in line is the command we wanna do. Matplotlib in line. The next thing we wanna do is, okay, good, is import matplotlib.pyplot. And we want to import that as PLD. I think also, matplotlib.pyplot. And we also want to go ahead and numpy is good to numpy as np. And I also want to go ahead and import in pandas because we're going to use that later. So those are the three libraries that we're going to use. To basically illustrate how matplotlib can basically get some pretty pictures out of your graph. So the first thing we're going to do is we're just going to go ahead and do some simple plots just to see what they look like, just to see how we can interact with them and how we can customize them, all right? So the first thing we're going to do is x is equal to, we're going to create x equal to np, so the NumPy library. It's got a function called linspace. So what linspace does is if you give it the starting point and the ending point, it's just like when we did the periods for our dates and our timestamps. Same thing. It does a starting point and an ending point, and then how many we want it to broken into. And since we're going to be playing with the sine curve, we'll go from 0 to 2 pi, and we'll break it into 50 seconds. So x is equal to np dot linspace. And we're going to go from 0 to 2 times np.py, which is the built-in pi function, and we want 50. Okay, so now what we can say is we can go ahead and plot. So we'll do a plt.plot. We're going to give it an x value, and we're going to give it a y value, np.sine of x. And the last thing we have to do is show our plot. So really, that's it in a nutshell, how you use matplotlib. You give it an x value, you give it a y value, and you tell it to plot. Anything after this is just essentially pure icing that you're putting on there. Putting in labels, putting in different types of plots, and you're putting in, labeling your axes, putting multiple plots together on the same plot, things like that, which is actually rather useful. So we're going to keep on going. Does anybody see a nice little sine curve? For those of you who are following along? All right, cool. All right, so the next thing what we can do is we can add a second plot to our existing plot as well. So if we want to use the exact same axis that we did before, we can do plt.plot, x, np.sine of x. And let's say we wanted to also plot two sine of x. So we'll give it the same x value, and we can do 2 times np sine of x. And we'll show that plot. So now, same graph, same set of axes, and now we have two plots going at the same time. Which essentially means that if we have these plots being generated we can now essentially plot everything at once and get one giant curve if we wanted to, two different colors. So if we had some sort of time iterative method going on, we can show each iteration as it's going through on the exact same plot. And of course, now if you want to change things around, so first off, I have to admit, I am colorblind, so I can see this is blue, and I'm assuming the other one is probably red, or orange, or green, one of those three colors. It's orange. I can kind of see it better on my screen. If I look up there, it's definitely green. So, all right, anyway, so you have orange and blue. So one thing you may want to do is add some different colors to it, or add different diagrams to it. So we can say, all right, let's go back to our plot here. And now we can say, all right, let's have our two plots. We'll plot the sine curve with red. So we can say that's going to be red, and it's going to be done with little O's. All right, and we can say the other one is going to be green. And we're going to use dashes. Right? Green. So now, we have one that has little green dashes on it, and the other one that has red O's on it. And the only reason I can tell what they are is because I said make one red and make one green. Green's going to have dashes, so I know this one's green, and the red's going to have O's, so I know that one's red. So we can now add a little bit of customization to our graphs. We can change things around if you wanted to. We can add labels. Labels will probably be kind of important. Oh, by the way, I want to include this. These are all the colors that are available to use. So we have B for blue, G for green, R for red. The only one that's kind of weird is K for black, because B is taken by blue. And W is for white. So these are all the different types of lines we can use. But we can use dash for a solid line, underscore for a solid line, dash for a dash, dot. We can use dot, dash, dotted, which means it just, there we go, dash color. Sorry, it's underscore timeline. Underscore colon, and you get the little dot dashes. I've never actually done that one before. That's different. And of course, you have O's and squares, and then triangles as well. So we can do little triangles. Anyways, there's different ways of labeling your graph to make seem what it is you're trying to do. All right. We can also split the plots up into multiple subplots. So how this works is you break your graph into, in this case, we're saying there's going to be two sections, and then we're saying, all right, and there's going to be one graph in each section, and which section is currently active. All right, so what we're saying is we're setting up a row, a column, and an active area. So we're going to have essentially row 2, column 1, and we're going to plot something in the row 2, column 1, and we're going to plot something in the active area too. All right. So we have one active area and two active area, and we're going to plot two different things on it. This actually makes it so it's a little easier to put a bunch of plots together and have a different axis system if you wanted to. So we can do a plot, subplot, and we're going to say how many you want, two rows, one column, active area one. And let's go ahead and do our sine in one of them, t.plot. PLT.subplot 2, 1, so we have the two act areas, and now we're going to say active area is going to be 2, and we're going to plot inside there. Oh, and P.minus, yeah. I always, that gets me. And if I do plot.show, it actually doesn't tell me what the object type is, it just actually runs it for me. So, you know, there's our active area 1, there's our active area 2, and the same kind of thing goes through. This subplot line essentially tells it what it's trying to set up and which box we're trying to graph it in. So we said two rows, one column, active area 1, active area 2. And that slide didn't convert as well. All right. So we can actually do other things as well. And this is kind of what makes, this is kind of cool with data especially, is we can also do scatter plots. So if I want to do, let's go ahead and set y equal to sine and np dot sine of x. So it's a little bit better. And now we can do a plt dot scatter. And I can say x comma y. We can do all that. By the way, these plots are savable as well. So if I did fig equals, I think it's fig, and do that. Can't remember how to save it, but there is a command available that allows you to save the figure to whatever, and it saves it as a PNG file. So we can also save, if you right click, you can click. Nine times out of 10, this is what I usually do, is I right-click on the image and save as. It will save it as a PNG type image. So the PNG images are actually good enough. You can put them in your papers to publish. So that's where almost all my graphs come from.
How do you in this graph, if there was a list of functions?
Yes. So if you pull up any object in Python, so if I do PLT and I did tab and I hit the dot and I hit tab, it will give me all of the available methods and all of the available attributes for that object. So even in our little disease propagation model that we did the other day, there is, you know, we did the person object, right? So let me just pull one of these up. Actually, yeah, Joe's already in here. So if I hit Joe, dot. If I hit tab, there's all the stuff that we did for our person object. You know, all the different attributes and methods. Now this isn't very common, but, and I didn't actually do it in my example, but when I actually write code that I'm going to reuse later, I like to distinguish what is a method and what is a attribute. So usually what I do is my methods are always in capital letters, and or first letters capitalized, and then all my attributes are lowercase letters. That way I can look at it and know what's what. I did not do this for our examples. Honestly, I don't know why I didn't. Alright, so, go back to my math closet. So yeah, if you hit the tab button, it auto-completes for you, which makes life a little nicer. So, other things we can do, of course, you can, actually this one's kind of cool. This is really kind of what shows a little bit more of the scatter plot, because this is kind of boring, honestly. So we'll have x equals nb.random. And we'll just have random numbers between, like 1,000 random numbers. We'll have y equal to np dot random, random numbers again. And let's go ahead and do a scatter plot on there. Let's do that too. Size equal np dot random, I think. Yeah. Okay, sure. That was it. And we'll make that a little bigger so we can actually see it. And then we also do color. Color equals np.random.rand. All right, so four random numbers. And now we're going to go ahead and plot it. So we're going to do plot.scatter x, y, size, and color. So plot.scatter x, the x-coordinate, y-coordinate, the size we want, and the color we want. And then we do a plot.show. And we get this cool, basically this color palette, just random dots. We can do one more thing on that, which is really cool. We can have it do a color bar. And since the colors are already there, we don't actually have to tell it anything about what the color bar means, because it already has the colors in there. So we just run the color bar with it, and then puts a little color bar next to it. And the color bar is associated with, I think, the size is what it comes out to be. So, which is actually kind of slick. You can easily make these graphs more and more complex that you'd like them to do. Also, so what we did was, like I said, we added the scatter and the color bar. The color bar just gave us an ISO color legend. The scatter reuses the two new parameters, which is size and color. And then, of course, we can also do histograms. So let's go ahead and we can do that. Plot. Histogram. and we can tell it to go ahead and do a histogram on X, and how many segments we want to break X into. So we can break X into, originally had 50, that's fine. And plot that show. And so there's a histogram of the values of X. You know, are this, mind you, these are the random X's from up here. So the value of random X is into 50. We can make it into 500 if we wanted to, and you know, break it into more sections. And then, of course, we can add stuff. Like I said, you might want to add a label to it. So you can put on your plot, after you graph it, you can put label equals sine X. On our next graph, you can put label equals cosine X. You can add a legend. Let's go ahead and go back up to this. So let's add another random graph. So we have linear space, zero back to two times pi, broken into 50. Have a sine curve with a label on it, have a cosine curve with a label on it. And then we'll add our X label, our Y label, and our title. And then we can run that. So now we have our X axis as labeled. We are, I'm sorry, our cosine X graph is labeled, our sine X graph is labeled. We added a label to our Y, to our X, and given the curve the image itself a name. And so now, of course, you can save this image and go a little more with it. All right. So that's basically everything there is to do to just make simple graphs. All right. So we're going to essentially use these different techniques of graphing and add that to our propagation model. Right. So you guys need to know a couple things. First off, we need to figure out how to plot a data frame. Okay. Data frames are actually really, really easy to plot. All you do is you build your data frame object. You build it up, and then you do a data frame dot plot, and you tell it what kind you want the plot to be, and what columns in your data frame you want to graph. All right, so this is that little data frame we did yesterday, which has that time series, and then we built a cumulative sum on that time series as our index. So I'm going to go back to that. And I'm not going to do this yet. All right, so there's our data frame, built on our time series as an index, and built on the data frame of random numbers that cumulatively sums up, right? Okay, so if we were to go ahead and plot it, we're gonna plot X as A and Y as B. Yes, well, so there is A versus B on a cute little graph. That all we really did was we just pulled in our data frame that we built from up here, and we added that, went ahead and plotted that out. You might also be able to do different types, so we can also do bar. So if we want to take that same and from a scatter, multiple macros
en un solo lugar. Sí. Y se las puede poner como usted quiera, y muchas.
Oh, there it goes. Yeah, so there's my bar graph. All my, that's actually kind of cool. Looks like I got some error in there as well, because this is just so many. Maybe I should make this a little bit smaller on my, yeah. All right, so now, slightly smaller data set, so we can view it a little bit better. Should view a little bit better. So yeah, X, Y, color, I'm still confused about the error. Oh, that's not error, that's all the numbers that is trying to print out there. It's just way, way too many of them, that's why. Just trying to print out the values. So anyways, that's why it's all kind of a jumbled mess. Probably shouldn't really shut that label off. But anyways, we can also do bar, we can also do line. And a line is just gonna put everything together for us. So, we'll just connect the dots. Kind of crazy, but it's just random stuff right now. And then, of course, this could be useful, because what we may want to do is graph multiple items on the same axis system, right? So we can plot A versus B and plot A versus C on the same axis. So what we do is that there is a command in matplotlib called GCA. GCA, I think, stands for common axis, generate common axis, I think is what it stands for. And it will go ahead and reuse the same axis system. And it'll reuse the same axis system for our plot. So if we do that, so there is A and B, and there's A and C kind of on the same plot. Okay, so in a nutshell, when we're going to be plotting our data sets, this is essentially how we're going to do it. We're going to build our data. Now, I will give you a little bit of a hint. I didn't really give you this hint yesterday. When you're at this, and this is actually a really good thing to follow, when you are adding data to a data frame, do not append your data row by row. It's very, very, very slow, all right? So what I would suggest doing is you building a list or a NumPy array, but if it's gonna have different objects in it, or different types of objects, build a list. And then at the end of it, when your list is completely built, then push that into a data frame. Or take your data frame, if you already have one existing, take your data frame, output that as a list, make all your modifications to it, you know, your additions and replacing and all that stuff, and then go back and convert it back to a data frame. That is a faster way of doing it. So I'm going to go ahead and show you these last couple slides, and then we're going to go ahead and work on updating our model to be able to do our graphs. That's it. Wrong way. So, one thing we may also want to do is you may have 3D data to plot. All right, so let's say if we had a mesh, all right? So we had a mesh of points. And every single point in that mesh, which is X, Y, Y, every single point in that mesh is going to have a different value on X of Z. So Z is going to equal X squared plus Y squared, and we're looking at one big mesh that we're creating. All right, so the easiest way to view a mesh is to view it as a contour plot. If you want to view a mesh in 2D, and then add colors to make some parts light up and other parts dim down. So to do that, there is, this is actually really, really simple in, I'm gonna continue using the same exact library, but I'm gonna pull in the 3D toolkits because we're gonna use that here in a bit. So I'm gonna go and import in the 3D toolkits and import in the Axis 3D. We'll be using that here in a bit. Okay, so the easiest way to create a 3D a contour plot is, first off, we have to build our mesh, all right? So I'm gonna go ahead and do this. I'm gonna create a Z1, it's gonna be an empty array. So Z1's gonna be an empty array, it's gonna be 2001 points by 2001 points, all right? So that's what our grid's gonna look like. And now what I'm gonna add is I'm gonna add a heat map. So that's what IM is. I'm doing an IM show. So it is going to take Z1, which is this empty array, and it's going to apply this color map called hot. There are also, you can probably Google and find a bunch of other color maps that are available. And I'm going to tell it to show me a color bar based on IM, and then we're just going to look at the figure. So this works. Sometimes it doesn't. But if you notice, it is a heat map, so it's going to go from very hot to very cold, so negative 0.1 to 0.1. But since my entire array is empty, it's a bunch of zeros, it's all going to be that mid-color. All right? So now if we wanted to make some modifications to it, if I wanted to make a calculation based on every single one of these points that are inside my mesh, which is the 2001 by 2001, I just got to go through and do some fun math. And you think that would take a long time to do, but it's actually not very difficult. So we're going to go ahead, and I'm going to copy that over to the writing by hand. I and J, so I is equal to 0, J is equal to 0, and then our T, T is equal to 1. I would use that as a count originally. There's our empty mesh, 2001 by 2001. And then we're going to function X is going to go from negative 10 to 10 in steps of 0.01. And Y is going to go from negative 10 to 10 in 0.01. And all I'm going to do is build this array up that's going to be X squared plus Y squared. All right? So let's go ahead and run that. Alright, so ran that, so if I look at x, or if I look at, yeah, we'll see x. See x, the final value of x was that. If we all look at z, see z is that big giant array. You know, it goes from some hot spots up to some cold spots, depending on where it is on that graph. So if we want to do a contour plot, it's just as easy as saying, hey, we have, actually, we need to simplify our equation. I should have done that beginning. So I was wondering why I did it that way, and then the graph. But we can also simplify it. Remember, this is the joy of Python. If I included this function f1 and said x and y, and it's going to return x plus x times y, or x squared plus y squared, and I could define a function on it, I can then just go ahead and tell it to create this thing called a mesh grid. So let's do that. So I can say x is going to go from negative 10 to 10. This is going to be 2,000 spaces. Y is going to go from negative 10 to 10, and broken up into 2,000 periods. And then what we can say is this cap x and cap y is going to be a mesh that's going to be built on x and y. All right. So this is what makes life a little easy, is instead of going through this loop, you know, so I'm going through this loop, what looks like 2,000 times, going for x and y. I don't need to do that anymore with just a simple function definition and then building a mesh grid for x and y. And now I can say z is equal to f1 of x and f1 of y. So it goes to this, my function I've created. It sends in this entire linear space, this entire mesh of x, and then again this entire mesh for y, sends that into the equation, and then it goes through every single point in my mesh and calculates what x squared, y squared is going to be. So now we can look at that z, or if I run that out, and look at that z. So there's my z. And actually goes ahead what every single value is. It cuts out the middle because there's so many, right? And since I have also increased it to 2,000. Now, this is where we can create a contour plot. Because I want to show you guys what that looked like before we did the contour on it. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to show that grid anyways. All right. So anyways, let's just do this real quick. Since we already have this graphed up here, let's just recopy that. And after we built our z here, let's go ahead and paste that. And instead of, let's say that's going to be z, right? Z is 2,000, so we should be able to plot z. Alright, so we did this mesh here, right? And I went ahead and just, well, I have a slide that actually tells you what everything, what we were doing, but I couldn't find that. The notebook was taking too long to come up. So we went through here manually, right? And we went through our for loop and we calculated each point of x and each point of y. And then we went ahead and said z is going to equal x squared plus y squared for every single point on that grid. And we manually went through there, right? Through a big giant loop. And the loop did a 2,000 by 2,000 grid is what it built for us. If we went ahead and just plotted it the same way we plotted it up here, which is just saying, hey, we're going to be doing IM show, which is the contour plot. We're going to give it the hot heat map, and we're just going to plot z. And z, mind you, z was an array, right? So when I said, go ahead and plot that and give me a color bar, this is what it created for me. All right, so obviously hottest in the middle and coldest in the edges, hottest in the edges, coldest in the middle, look at our graph here. And so it gave us this really cool heat mesh, right? This gives you half the information. Because as you saw, I had to look at the color map to see exactly what the information should be. The other way to do it is to convert this into a mesh. All right, and this is where we come with our mesh grid, and we build it using a function. So now we take a linear space of x and a linear space of y, break it into a bunch of, a section. We take that x, and we take that y, and we tell it to build a grid. So x by itself here, if I look at x, is just going to be a bunch of numbers going from minus 10 to 10 in steps of, broken up into 2,000 bits, right? So that's my x. y is going to be the same thing, go from negative 10 to 10, and it's also going to be, you know, the same kind of mesh. So what I'm telling it now to do, if you look at capex is an array. So it took my array and it made it into a big giant grid for me. And same thing with my y, it made that into a big grid for me. So when I said z equal to f1 of x, it gave me that cool bits of z, right? So now what we want to do is let's go ahead and graph that in 3D, not just as a contour. And for that, we can do this bit. So once again, we're going to create the plotting figure. All right, so fig one's the old plot fig. I'm giving it an axis, and now I'm giving it this new line. I'm saying projection 3D. So now it knows I'm going to be doing a 3D print. So I do. There's a command in AX in this axis system. Remember that's that 3D axis I brought up. We'll say, all right, there's going to be an x-axis, a y-axis, and a z-axis, and we're going to pull the data from the mesh that we created, x, y, and z. And then we're going to say, hey, how do we want to split that up? And then what's our map going to be? And then we set some labels. The last thing is here, we set up a viewpoint. I mean, we say where that view is going to be at. That view is going to be from 75. So it's basically 90s up here and 75s over here and so on. So if we run that, we get a cute little 3D graph. Should get a cute little 3D graph. And still, there we go. So X, Y, Z, X, Y, here's Z, and then it gave us this 3D contour map of it. And if we wanted to, you know, we can change our plot. Let's say we give 90, 90 should be straight up. Yeah, so 90 is straight up. There's our X, there's our Y, and a Z is coming right at us. So essentially, you can use this to build your contour plots, to make little, really cute little 3D images that are pretty quick to use and nice to look at. I think 100 might have been a bit much. We'll see. Should give us a prettier image that we can compare the two together. Yeah, so there it is with 100. 100 sections, and give us the entire graph, cold spot, hot spot in the middle. Okay, so what we're going to be using really is this df.plot. So we're going to make a couple modifications to our code. So I'm going to go back to our disease propagation model, and not this one. Okay, so here we're back to our person object, right? And back to our population. When we run this code, you know, we go ahead and say, all right, the population, we give it a population number, and we go ahead and run it and tell us how long things have happened for. One thing that we want to do is we want to change this code a little bit. We want to be able to not just build a population, but we want to make this population have, we want to add inoculation to it. All right. So when they build it, it's not just a number that of how big the population is, but it's also going to be how many people we want to be sick. All right. So we'll have a default value of 1 because that's what we have right now, and this is what builds patient 0. If we pass it, let's say we just say it's going to be, you know, 5 people are going to be inoculated out of a group of 10. Couple things we have to do is we're gonna infect one person, right? We're also going to inoculate. Yeah, we're gonna infect one. That's what I'm gonna say. We're gonna build our population, and we're going to infect one person. We're also going to inoculate. Inoculate X amount of people. X people. Okay, and because everything's kind of built in a random environment. So, by the way, guys, I know some of you didn't get this notebook completely finished yesterday. If you'd like to, I do have that up in our share folder. So try Google. To our share. Under PDFs, I do have the entire notebook built already, my version of it built, so you guys may, if you have your own, fantastic. If you want to use mine, it's right here called Disease Propagate, and that is the exact same version I have right now. But, so the Disease Propagate, what we want to do now is we want to inoculate some people. The easiest way to do that is just make a little loop. So we already have a loop going here. We're appending people to it, so really we just take advantage of that. So we can say if I less than this inoculate number. We're going to go ahead and inoculate that person. So P, which is our person object, I'm going to go ahead and hit tab. So this will automatically inoculate whatever number of people we need to have set to true. So now we're going to vaccinate a certain percentage of our population. The one thing we have to kind of still do is we have this patient zero, right? So we need to make sure that patient zero isn't part of this inoculated group. So the easiest way to do that is we can just do a little if loop here and just keep adding a number to it until it's no longer true. So what I might just do is decide here if I is greater than patient zero. I'm just going to do it right here instead. Since our population has already been built, who's inoculated, who's not. We'll just do a while patient zero self dot patient people sub patient zero. Chase that for a long time, trying to figure out why is my code working. All right, so if I is less than inoculate, and then we're going to go and say, we're going to go ahead and inoculate that person. P dot is inoculated equals true. All right? Where's that? Yes? Oh, yeah, that's cool too. It's been a long week. Inoculate. All right, now patient zero is less than inoculate. We're going to reset patient zero to inoculate. We're just going to inoculate the next one. I'm not too concerned about if it's still random or not. We'll just set patient zero equals inoculate.
So boy.
Because inoculate is going to be 0 through 4, essentially. So we'll just go ahead and set patients here equal inoculate if we can't do something random. That should guarantee you that we can infect the person. Because you can't be both infected and inoculated at the same time. All right? So now, if we add this a little bit to it, we now have the ability to change our numbers. So I'm going to go ahead and draw all my cells and make sure everything's up to date.
Es que hay Enterprise y hay normal. Enterprise es un Enterprise
así que chulo,
pero hay normal.
Sirve todavía.
Enterprise es ya pichu.
Propagated, things look good, all right? So we can change this. Remember, this is still built with just the one person, but now we can say, what if 100 people were inoculated? So 100 people inoculated, there's 993 people of the population are now inoculated after the disease went through, 725 maximum, and our days progressed for 21, right? So what if I did, say, 200? That's kind of interesting. 200, nobody got sick that time. Let's run that again. Okay, this time people did get sick. And went for 23 days. And this time went for 25 days. I'm not sure why I keep coming across some zeros. 200. Unless I still have a bug in my inoculated code. I wonder if that's still happening. For some of these cases, if patient zero is too small. Is your patient zero plus one to guarantee that they're going to be infected? Or inoculate plus one, rather? All right. That's okay. We have a error in our data set. I did my version a little different than we did this version. I picked another random person back here. This might be easier to go to. Yeah, so now we're getting a little bit more interesting numbers. Okay, so now that we're getting this data coming up, we no longer actually need to print this data out. So I'm going to go ahead and just comment that out, because we're now going to plot this stuff instead. Okay, and control enter. Let's run this a few more times to make sure. Still looking good. 23 days. Alright, so it seems to be looking pretty good to me. So what we want to do now is we want to create, remember I told you the best way of converting this thing into or to plot it is we want to take it into a data frame, because we want to run multiple instances of it and we want to have a bunch of different runs. What we're going to do is create a data frame. So I'm going to go ahead and call first, create a list, and I'll say data plot, and make this an empty list. Next, what I want to do is let's do that. Let's make this sick. Sick equals
zero.
Max sick. Day count, max sick. All right. And instead, what I'm going to do now is, since they're all zero, I'm going to take my data plot. And I'm going to append this set of data, which is going to be sick, comma, day count. So we're just going to look at what that bell curve looks like for now. Now what we're going to do is go ahead, now that that's going to be, should be zero and zero, we're going to each day before we update. So we get our sick people. We calculate what that's out. We're going to update the day, and we're going to update the population. So the next day, we're going to be doing this. We're going to look at sick is going to equal my population dot number of sick. That way I don't have to keep referring back to the function every single time, or the thing. Date count comes in, max sit comes out, so I should be able to, instead of appending it there, we'll append it here after you figured out everything that is sit that day. Okay, so you see what I did. All I did was I created a data plot. It's going to be an empty list, and now we're just going to append to that empty list. The stuff that we're printing out is now just going to be appended. So now if we run this, we shouldn't see any changes. Control enter to run. All right, things are still staying the same. Let's look at what data plot looks like. So there's my data. You know, first day, what's that? Day comma sick. Should be day comma sick. Day count. That makes a lot more sense. All right, so we'll run that and look at date plot. And all right, so day zero, one person sick. Day one, two people sick, so on and so forth, all right? And it went on for, 22 days. So everything's looking good. Now what we want to do is we can convert this into a data frame. And that's really what you guys are going to do, is to build our entire list and take that data frame. To do that, it's actually rather simple. And I think I have a DF I put slide in there for you guys. I might have not. You can say pandas.dataframe is going to equal where we're going to get the data from, which is going to be coming from data plot. All right, and it's a not index. All right, and the columns are going to be, all right, I guess, yeah, so we have columns. We're going to name this thing, we're going to give some columns. So it will be day. And then we're going to give it our columns, which is day and number sick, which is going to be a set. And then we're going to go ahead and look at that. Data frame. So there's our data frame now. All right, so we took our information from our list, and we put that into a data frame. And with that data frame, of course, we can query it. We can describe it. So there's our description of it. 23 rows, what the mean value is on the day, we're not really clear about the day, but the number of sick, what the mean value is, what the standard deviation is, and then the different percentages of max and min, right? So this gives us some really quick information about what our model looks like. And then the final thing you want to do is we want to plot this thing, and that is, where did my slides go? There it is. So remember, to plot a data frame, all we're doing is we're going to say, what it is we want to plot, what is going to be our x-axis, and what's going to be our y-axis. And then, we only need one graph right now, you guys might add another graph here in a bit. We're going to graph our day, we're going to graph our number sick, and we're just going to give it the standard axis. I never recorded that in here. That we're building here that does all of our calculations and our prints. I'm going to go ahead and copy that because I want something new to mess with. Oops. And let's make that into its own very own function. I'm going to call it analyze. And what's kind of neat is we wanted to, this would be a perfect static method that we add to our object. I'm going to call it analyze. Analyze is going to take two things. It's going to take a population count, and it's going to take an occupation count. All right. So population count is here, and inoculation count is here. And now let's go ahead and make all of this part of my new function that I created called analyze. And for the fun of it, if we also wanted to, we can go ahead and put our plot function in there as well. So as well, it's here. Let's see. So let's put our plot. I normally don't like to put our plot stuff inside of our function because I prefer to either return me something and I grab it myself, or go ahead and just run it as it is. All right. Well, now that we have a function, I can type analyze, and I can give it a population count of 1,000, and say we're going to inoculate 100, and we can run that, and it'll graph it for us. So now we're looking at disease propagated for 20 days, 708 people were sick, and 994 people were inoculated. And we can see what the graph looks like, right? Now, we can inoculate some more. Let's do see what it looks like with 200. Oh, what happened? Oh, it came back to zero again. It should not be. That's why, I wonder why. I have to look at that and I wonder why this version keeps giving me zeros from 200s. That's awfully lucky of somebody not to get sick if only 200 people are inoculated. So we can, and so then we can look at the, say, 700. And I still don't understand why zero people are being sick. So what this error is getting is telling me my data frame has no data to plot. That should not be the case. Because there should be at least one person getting sick. So I think it's happening here somewhere. When I'm building my population and I want to try to inoculate somebody, inoculate plus one, because we know up until that number, anybody is ill. And, oh, that's why. Misspelling again. It should be patient zero. Because I'll set some other, so patient zero was actually zero in some case. Alright, let's run on this also.
Which one was the probability?
There you go. That makes a lot more sense. 79 people, it's like only one person got sick. Right? Let's go ahead and say, let's run 600 people. Let's see what it looks like. So 600 people, you know, 37 days is what the disease propagated for. The maximum number of people sick were 150, and the population ended up being inoculated as 931. There might be some modification we do to our code to make this even better. But to get this to be some really exciting data that we're going to mess with, is we should put this inside of a loop where we increase the amount of inoculated people by, say, by multiplying it by 10. All right, so we can run 10 different cases on 1,000 with 100 people inoculated, then 200 people inoculated, then 300 people inoculated, and keep building it up and see what does this look, first, what does our graph look like? What does the disease propagation look like? And how many people are getting sick? How is that? How fast is that coming down as we're building more, as we're building our model out and putting more data into the system? I'm going to have you guys go ahead and take a little bit of time and see if you can put this into a loop and get some cool data coming out. So I think we have a coffee break coming up here. So we have a coffee break coming up, so we'll take a coffee break.
We'll
come back in here. Yes?
Can you upload the last
But this new version that we just did right now?
Yeah, I'll upload it.
The uploaded version has been brought in here, and we're going to stay named injury. I should probably read that.
Change Windows Home to Pro.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. 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 Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. The new notebook has been put into the shared folder, the Zeek's property. So I guess coffee is ready. Carlos asked me to say let's take about 20 minutes break because there's some things I want to discuss with you guys as well. One of the things some of you may want to do is continue using our resources attack. So I want to explain what the process of creating an attack account will be. And then we'll go through a little bit more here. So, all right, thanks guys.